Back to the passage that Brother Halad read this morning, Luke chapter 14, please, in your Bibles. Luke chapter 14. Years ago, there was a television show called Leave It to Beaver, a show that a lot of people used to watch. I remember watching one of the episodes, and you'll remember some of the characters in this TV show. One was Wally. How many remember Wally? And Little Beave, and Eddie Haskell. I was watching one of those episodes, and Wally was trying to get a job to mow lawns. And he was going out and trying to get jobs, and nobody would hire him. And so his friend Eddie Haskell had the solution. He says, Wally, you need to do what I do. What you do is you go out, you find a lawn that needs mowing, and you mow it. And when you're done, you go up to the owner and say, pay up. And Wally had never thought of that. So Wally goes to this real nice home. He sees that the lawn needs mowing. And he mows it like a teenager would mow a lawn. Lines like this and so forth and so on. And so when he's done and he sees the owner comes home, the guy is standing looking at his lawn going, what happened to my lawn? And Wally's standing there with his hand out. No way am I going to pay you. This is horrible. Wally had learned something from a guy by the name of Eddie Haskell, who, if you ever watched those other episodes, was always presumptuous. Presumptuous. Now, with that illustration in mind, let me give you the definition of to presume. Here's the American Heritage Dictionary definition of the word presume. To take for granted as being true in the absence of proof to the contrary. But here's the third definition, which really goes more along with what we're looking at this morning. To venture without authority or permission. To dare. I'm not emphasizing the dare part, but going with the illustration with Wally, to venture without authority or permission. As an intransitive verb, that is a verb that doesn't take a direct object, it's to act overconfidently, to take liberties, to go beyond the proper limits. So as we look at this passage this morning, I want you to think of these definitions: to venture without authority or permission, take liberties, go beyond the proper limits. With that definition in mind, look at the parable that Jesus tells, that Brother Paul read this morning. You're not going to find that word presume in this passage, but Jesus tells a parable where a man, when invited, assumes ahead of time. That is, he presumes that he can sit in the best place. In other words, he ventures without authority or permission. He takes liberties. He goes beyond the proper limits. Today, when you go to a banquet, if the host of that dinner is wise, they will take place cards and they will set those on the table so that there's no disagreement or nobody presumes to go where they think they have the right to go. But have you ever gone to a banquet or to a dinner like that and watched people go up and without anybody looking, take the place card and move it? It happens. They presume. They take liberties. They go beyond the proper limits. They venture without authority or permission. Perhaps an illustration that hits home right here. We have a fellowship dinner. And I will often announce, now folks, here's the order in which we are going to eat today. And it doesn't matter how I do it. Somebody probably gets offended every time. Why didn't they ask me to go first? Why can't such and such go first? Somebody wants to venture without authority or permission to take liberties. even in a situation like that. I say all that to say this: presumption. Presumption is actually very common among believers. Not just unbelievers. To venture without authority or permission. This is such a down-to-earth parable that Jesus gives here. Assuming liberties that go beyond the proper limits. You know, something that I see in this passage is that nothing goes unnoticed by Jesus. Even how you sit down at a table to eat, he notices it. And we need to realize that everything we do, God notices it, folks. Not just in what we do, but how we do it. Did you see that in verse 7? When Jesus marked how they chose. It's not just what they're doing, but how they're doing it. He sees the motive behind everything that we do. There's four lessons that we need to learn from this parable on presumption. And I want you to take these four lessons today and humbly ask yourself if this applies to you. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when somebody said that a message had really touched them, I said, you know what, it touched me first. And this is one of those as well, that I study it and I've got to confess and I've got to get things right with the Lord in areas where perhaps you'll be hit with something this morning as well. Here's the first lesson we need to learn from Jesus' parable on presumption. It's this: the prominence of it. The prominence of presumption. Let's read again verse 7. And he put forth a parable to those which were bidden when he marked how they chose out the chief rooms, saying unto them. Here's the first thing about the prominence of presumption I want you to see. Presumption is noticeable. Presumption is noticeable. Who is at this dinner? If you go back to verses 1 through 3, you'll notice in verse 3 that there are some lawyers at this dinner. Now, please note, these aren't the lawyers we would think of today. These are not lawyers who today would be involved in civil type disputes. These were men who studied the Bible and were specialists on the law of God. So these would be like the scribes, and always mixed in with these people would be the Pharisees. In fact, whose house are they in? Go back to verse 1, and you'll notice that they are in the house of a chief Pharisee. And notice who is watching whom. Do you see who's watching whom in verse 1? They watched him. The chief Pharisee and all of the others in his house are watching him. Who is him? They're watching Jesus. They are so scrupulous about what he does. They're watching every little move that he makes. They're trying to trap him. But ironically enough, somebody's watching them. You see that in verse 7? When he marked how they chose. That word marked is kind of an interesting word because this is actually the impetus for the parable that Jesus gives. Jesus was marking something. That is, he noticed something. He had his attention fixed upon something. He noticed how they were choosing. And by the way, that's in the imperfect tense, which means he was watching them as they continuously were choosing. It was almost like they were bumping elbows and fighting to get to some place in this room. Elbowing each other out. What were they choosing? Because the word, when it says they chose, is literally that. He was noticing how they chose out what? The chief rooms, or literally the chief couches. If you go back into this day and note their customs, their culture, the Jewish culture, They would recline at a table. They would not sit down as we do. They would literally lay down with their feet out behind them, and there would be these big pillows that would be long, and there would be three to a couch, three to a big pillow that was shaped in a U shaped around the table. The chief person would sit in the bottom of that U, and then he would be reclining. I said, sit. He would be reclining. And then there'd be somebody reclining over here, somebody reclining over here. Now, if you want to be known for something, you want to get close to the host. You want people to notice who you are, because if you can get noticed, you'll be invited to the next dinner. Because people are going to go, well, he sat there. He must be, well, I need to ask him. He needs to be on my invitation list. And so they would recline. Well, there'd be three or four of these couches there. But the main couch was the one where the host would sit. So Jesus noticed how they chose out literally the first couch. So he is watching them. I too have noticed, perhaps you too have noticed, how presumptuous people can be. A sin, I call it a sin that people think is not noticeable. The fact is, this is a parable. But the fact that this is a parable shows that Jesus is not merely trying to teach us good manners. He is not in this parable just trying to teach you how to be polite, folks. He is pointing out to the Pharisees their sinful behavior. And if it's sinful for them, it is sinful for us to be presumptuous. Folks, you can be as scrupulous as a Pharisee and not notice that you are guilty of this very thing. It may have to be pointed out to you, even as Jesus has to point it out to these Pharisees. It may be such a habitual thing that you're involved in that you have to be told this. But how often is somebody going to come up to you and say, I hate to tell you this, but in a parable, Jesus says that the host may have to. Let me say something. Seats reserved. Move. You ever seen that happen somewhere? When I was an usher at Bob Jones University, there were people who would be presumptuous enough to take a seat where they didn't belong. And I would have to go up to them and say, I'm sorry, sir. You see this reserved? You're going to have to move. And they, with shame, would get up and go to a lower seat. What was the problem? Was I the problem? Or was it the presumer? It was the one who presumed to take liberties that were not his. It was his problem to venture without authority or permission, to go beyond the proper limits. I trust that you'll ask yourself if this is you this morning. And you know what? Every one of us is guilty of this in some area. Every one of us. I have many applications to make, so don't limit presumption to the few examples that I'm going to give this morning. Number one. Number two, don't take offense. He was talking about me. Maybe I was. But don't forget, my toes have already been stepped on. Let me give you some examples. You go to a restaurant. Somebody says, hey, let's go out to eat somewhere. And you sit down, and the host says, I'm paying. What do you do? Well, you were looking at salads. I'm paying. Now, men, what are you looking at? Come on. Steak and lobster. That's right. You know what that's called? Presumption. You're presuming. Now, don't raise your hand, but how many of you are guilty of that? How many of you are guilty of that? Here's another example. You walk into the room, and since you're front in line, you take the most comfortable seat in the room. I will jokingly say this is what happens in my office, that nice chair that that Steve and Marilyn McCoy got me some time ago. It is so comfortable. Man, beeline to that chair, you know? I say that jokingly because the guys who do it jokingly. But that's presumption. I get it. It's like when I was a little kid. You know what we do after church? Or before church, actually. You'd be on the farm and the car's out there warming up in the wintertime or whatever. And it would be shotgun. How many of you know what shotgun is? I'm not talking about the gun. I'm talking about where you sit in the car. And out of eight kids, you had to be the first one. If you said shotgun first, you got to sit in front between mom and dad because there were no car seats in those days. There were car seats, but not the little ones. You sat in a seat. Shotgun, what is that? Presumption. I get the first seat. This attitude of presumption is that this applies to others, but not to me. I have the authority to do what these other people won't do, so I'll do it. I used to be with the president of the university in places, and those of you who know of Bob Jones University, Dr. Bob Jones III, everybody was vying for his time, everybody. And I would observe this, and I would see that when somebody would get a hold of him, he could not tear himself away. And they would monopolize his time. And it became my job sometimes to help him with that. Where I would have to go in and interrupt, say, Dr. Bob, we've got to go. Let's go, or whatever. But it used to really bother me that pastors even would insert themselves when there's so many others who would like to talk to him, who would like to be with him, would like to say something to him because his time is limited. But people would monopolize the time. Folks, that's presumption. To presume upon something that is not your right to do. Presumption may even be in the form of wanting to do a favor for somebody else. It may be wanting to help somebody else, buying a gift perhaps that you know that they will put on display in their home, and you buy something that you like and presume that they will like, and if they don't hang it up because you presume that they would like it, then all of a sudden you get offended because they're not hanging up the thing that you thought that was really neat. Or it's something that suits your color tastes or your taste, whatever. And so you presume to do something. Do you see how many examples there can be here? How many applications there can be of presumption? So we're talking about this. Presumption is noticeable. But secondly, presumption is a choice. Notice that Jesus marked how they chose out the chief rooms. This is lest anyone here this morning thinks, well, I just can't help it. You choose to do this. They chose to do this. It may become a habit where you think, well, I just can't help it anymore. No, a habit is something that can be broken. Whatever you choose to do, you can choose not to do. You can choose not to be presumptuous. And Jesus is going to give us a prescription for that we're going to see later. Here's how you handle presumption in your own life. But the first thing we need to see here is the prominence of presumption. It may not be prominent to you, especially if you're the one guilty of it, but I'm telling you, people see it. People see it. Well, you may still be thinking, well, what's wrong with presumption? Well, that takes us to our second point. The partner of presumption. What is the partner of presumption? And I want you to notice some synonyms of the word presumptuous. If you go to a thesaurus, here's what you're going to find as words that are synonymous with presumption. Arrogant, rude, audacious, insolent, disrespectful, pushy, big-headed, over-familiar, shameless. We're talking about the partner of presumption. Are you still not sure what that partner is of presumption? Here's another clue. Look at verse 11. Whosoever exalteth himself. Are you still unsure what the partner is? It's pride. Presumption stems from pride. Pride is the partner of presumption. That's why earlier I called this the sin. The sin of presumption. You'll notice in verse 12 that Jesus had been invited to this dinner because it says, then said he also to him that bade him, to the one who had invited him. Just like the others had been invited, you'll see that in verse 7, to those who were bidden. Note who Jesus noticed as being presumptuous. We talked about this. It was the lawyers and the Pharisees in verses 1 through 3. The setting was a house of one of the chief Pharisees, verse 1. These are Pharisees. These are lawyers. Now I want you to note, just a few chapters later in Luke chapter 20, what Jesus says about this particular group of people. Note Luke chapter 20, verses 46 and 47. He says there, beware of the scribes which desire to walk in long robes and love greetings in the markets and the highest seats in the synagogues and the chief rooms at feasts. This was what they did. Verse 47, which devour widows' houses and for a show make long prayers, the same shall receive greater damnation. Notice what Jesus says there. They make a show. They're show-offs. A presumptuous person is often a show-off. Go back to Matthew chapter 23. This is the chapter where Jesus pronounces his woes upon the scribes, the Pharisees, the hypocrites. Matthew chapter 23. Parallel to what we just read there in Luke chapter 20. Matthew chapter 23, in verses 1 through 3, especially verse 3, Jesus says, whatever these Pharisees and these scribes bid you to observe, that observe and do, but do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. They may talk about being humble, but they're not. Don't do what they do what they say. He says this in verse 5, but all their works they do, for what purpose? To be seen of men. They make broad their phylacteries and enlarge the borders of their garments. They love the upmost rooms at the feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues and greetings in the markets and to be called of men, Rabbi, Rabbi. What is it they like? They like when they go to church, they get the chief seat. I say church, this is a synagogue, but it was when they would assemble with the Jews. What were the Pharisees doing? Shotgun. I get the best. And when they'd go to a wedding feast, which is the word for feasts there, they made sure that they were the ones who sat at the head table. They were always taking liberties that were not theirs. They were presumptuous. They were show-offs. Years ago, I went on a trip. A long trip. It was with a group of people. We were in Israel, went to Egypt, went to Rome. And there was one particular person on this trip. He was an older man. And you would talk about, we would go to a site, we would go to a place in Israel. And he'd been there before. And it did not matter where we went. If one of us would say, That was so neat. His response was always, "You ain't seen nothing yet." It didn't matter. If we go to a restaurant, "Oh, that's nothing. Wait until we get to such and such." And then when you get there, it was like, it was always where you could never outdo him. Not that you ever tried, but you could never say anything. You could never go any place. You could never taste anything. But he had always had something that was much greater, much bigger. It was the best. You could never outdo him. Such a person is more likely to disobey Philippians 2:3. Esteem other better than yourself. Why? Because it requires Philippians 2:3, lowliness of mind. We're talking about the partner of presumption here. It's pride. And you can never say to somebody else who did something that was really good or saw something, you go, "Wow, that is really neat. Can I see?" The first thing out of their mouth is, "That's nothing. Let me show you what." You can never outdo them. Not that you're even trying. When a person talks incessantly, even when it's obvious that you have to go and you try to talk away and they're talking while you're walking, it's pride on the part of that person. My time is more important than yours. What I have to say is important enough to monopolize upon your time. I don't care if there's a line of people standing here who want to talk to. You know, you're hesitant to give privilege to a presumptuous person because of the partner of presumption, pride. I had a quote a couple of weeks ago. It came from Warren Wiersbe in his commentary on Philippians 2:6, and I read this to you, and I want to read it again. If you want to find out what a worker is really like, don't give him responsibilities, give him privileges. Most people can handle responsibilities if you pay them enough, but it takes a real person of character to handle privileges. A person of character will use his privileges to help others and build the organization. A lesser man will use privileges to promote himself, to presume. The greatest president I believe that we've ever had in America was the very first one, George Washington. What made George Washington such a great leader, folks? One of the things is that he was not a presumptuous man. I quote, "When Washington said he intended to return to his farm, rather than establish himself as a lord in the new dominion, he had wrested away from the British Empire." Here he is, the general, the one who led the armies, who if he wanted to, he could have made himself king, folks. But King George, against whom the armies, the Continental Army was fighting against, when King George heard about what George Washington did when he went back to his farm, King George famously said, "If he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world." And that's exactly what he did. He went back to his farm. And then the people exalted him. What George Washington did that we all admire is what many in churches refuse to do. They presume to continue practicing the authority even when they no longer hold that office, or assume authority they don't have. I call it the Diotrephes syndrome. Has anybody ever heard of a man by the name of Diotrephes in the Bible? Yeah. Very few know about this man. But he gave John a lot of trouble. Let's find this man. He's mentioned one time in John's third epistle, 3 John, verse 9. We just go to the verse because there's only one chapter. 3 John 9. There is a Diotrephes in every church, I believe. Here's what John says. I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes. Now, how is Diotrephes explained here? What is his character? What is he known for? Who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. It's the Diotrephes syndrome, where somebody may have had at one point an office, and then when that office has been terminated or the time has expired, they hang on to it as if they still have it. What's this called, folks? It's called pride. It's the partner of presumption. But we must hurry on. We need to go to the next point, and that is the path of presumption. And here's the first thing that presumption leads to. We're going to see this in verse 9. Presumption leads to demotion. Presumption leads to demotion. Notice what it says there in Luke chapter 14 and verse 9. It says, give this man place, and thou begin to take the lowest room or the lowest couch. You came in and you ran for the first couch. And then he that bade thee and him come, he comes up to you and says, give this man place. And you begin, and I'm leaving a little phrase out that I'm going to get to later, and you begin to take the lowest couch. By the way, notice it doesn't say the lower couch. You go down to the low. I mean, you go from the top to the pit. Why? You exalted yourself. Presumption, folks, leads to demotion. Leaders avoid using you. Leaders take away your responsibilities, especially your privileges, because you have abused your privileges. You give somebody a responsibility, you ask them to do something, you give them the instructions, you give them the limits on it, and they go beyond the limits. If you're a foreman or if you're in charge at a job, you know what I'm talking about, where somebody takes privileges upon themselves just because they've been given a little bit of a leash. Now they're pulling at the leash and they think that they're the ones in charge and they're the ones who can demand everything of everybody else. And then they take privileges that were never granted to them. And so you avoid using them again. That's the path of presumption. It's demotion. And that's what Jesus says here. Perhaps you know the verse. Pride goeth before what? And a haughty spirit before a fall. And in this parable, this man falls to the very lowest place. And yet because, even when a man is demoted, because pride is the partner of presumption, he may still have the attitude, well, I'm going to do it anyway, because I can do it. That's pride. You know, when the 10 spies came back and gave their evil report, and the 2 spies gave the good report, and then Moses, by authority of the word of God, said, you will not go into the land. The 10 led this group of people, said, no, we're going to go up anyway. We're sorry we did that. We're going to go up. And here's what the Bible says. But they presumed to go up unto the hilltop. Nevertheless, the ark of the covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. And so no longer does the authority go with them. Why? They presumed to do what they were not supposed to do. They took liberties that were not theirs. The presumers become isolated. Because presumption leads to demotion. And it also leads to another thing. Point 2, it leads to shame. This is the part I left out when I read verse 9. Let me read it again, but emphasize this part of it. Give this man place, and thou begin with what? Shame to take the lowest room, embarrassment. And what sometimes happens when somebody shames himself and has to be demoted? You employers can tell me what it is. They get mad. They get angry. Why? Ego. Pride. There was a couple of men in the Old Testament who had the privilege of offering incense up to God. And it was just in a short time. You find this in Leviticus already. It was just in a short amount of time that they were so overfamiliar. By the way, that's one of the synonyms of presumption. They became overfamiliar with their responsibility, their privilege as priests. Where they said, you know what? The fire that we need, we have to go way out there to the altar. Let's not do that. We've got a fire going here. Let's just take the fire from here. And God smote them. You know the story of Nadab and Abihu, who were presumptuous. They offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not. But they had become overfamiliar. They began to assume liberties that God had not given them. And it led to a shameful death. God wouldn't even let Moses and Aaron grieve over them. It was so shameful. It leads to shame. You walk into somebody's house for the first time. You're very careful. You're very considerate. But as you get to know them, you can tend to become presumptuous. You walk in and put your feet up on the coffee table. You even take your shoes off and your feet stink. You've become presumptuous, overfamiliar. You're given keys. And now you begin to use those keys for something you do not have the liberty to use those keys for. You become presumptuous. Well, I think we can see now how bad presumption is. But we see lastly the prescription for presumption. Jesus prescribes the solution. Verse 8, when thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, here's the prescription, sit not down in the highest room. Don't go to the first couch. And you go to verse 10, but when thou art bidden, go and sit down in the lowest. Notice this, it doesn't say lower. Go down to the very bottom. Start at the bottom. And he says in verse 11, for whosoever humbleth himself shall be exalted. What's the prescription, folks? You do what you don't want to do. It takes humility. Proverbs 25, verses 6 and 7 says this. Listen to this. Put not forth thyself in the presence of the king, and stand not in the place of great men. I remember a few years ago when George W. Bush had one of the teams come to the White House. They came in flip-flops. The girls did. You talk about presumption. They were trying to make a statement. Put not forth thyself in the presence of the king, and stand not in the place of great men. For better it is that it be said unto thee, come up hither, than that thou shouldest be put lower in the presence of the prince whom thine eyes have seen. That's from the book of Proverbs. You know, there was a person, there was a being who exalted himself in the Old Testament. And God had to take that being and cast him down because he exalted himself. His name is Lucifer. Presumption comes from Satan himself because it has to do with pride. Proverbs gives all kinds of interesting proverbs about what to do when you're invited somewhere. I like this one. It's Proverbs 25, 17. Withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house, lest he become weary of thee and so hate thee. Put in today's lingo, don't overstay. Better is it that they, oh, please don't go, than they're saying to themselves, I wish they would leave. Their time is up. James 4:10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and what will happen? He shall lift you up. Presumption is in the business of lifting yourself up. 1 Peter 5:6, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Jesus says here in verse 10 that the one who starts at the lowest couch, when he is asked to go higher, he shall have what? Can anybody find that? Because it's kind of an interesting word. Friend, go up higher, then shalt thou have worship. Now, the word worship there is not where people are bowing down to you. It's literally the word glory. You will have honor. Note that Jesus is here not teaching a false humility, because false humility, where you say, I'm going to go to the lowest seat so that I can go to the highest seat, where you have the wrong motives. A false humility, making sure that people see that you took the lowest couch, is a form of pride in itself. That's just as arrogant as taking the first couch. But folks, humility, this prescription that Jesus gives, humility is a grace within the reach of every Christian. You may not have money. You may not have intelligence. You may not have good looks. You may not have the ability to sing or to speak, but everybody can humble themselves. And that's what Jesus says. I like what Godet says. He says, in following Jesus' advice, we run no other risk than that of being exalted. Leon Morris says, the way to get to the top is to start at the bottom. If a man chooses the lowest place, the only way he can go is up. And that's what Jesus is saying. I'm going to close with this application, because Luke 14:11 also applies to salvation. Humility is within reach by God's grace of every person on this earth. Ultimately, listen to me, the greatest presumption any man can have is to think that he can take the highest seat, heaven, when he dies, because of who he is or what he has done. That is arrogance, that is pride, and the last time somebody tried to exalt himself in heaven, Jesus said, I saw him like lightning fall from heaven, because there's no place for pride or arrogance in heaven. And therefore, for anyone to be entering into heaven, they must, as Jesus said in Matthew chapter 18, you've got to humble yourself like a little child. Salvation is admitting your sin. Salvation is admitting, I deserve to go to hell. But humbly accepting from God his gift of salvation in Jesus Christ. That he paid the price for my sin. I cannot exalt myself to heaven. I don't deserve it. I have no merit. Nothing in my hand I bring. Simply to thy cross I cling. Boy, that's humility. That's not presumption. And it's not presumption for you to say to God, oh God, I'm a sinner. Please forgive me. I trust in what Jesus Christ did on the cross for me. That's not presumption. Why? Because God has offered it. He has encouraged it. He has commanded it. Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved. Would you bow your heads this morning? We read.